Hello, this is David Jensen with your October 30, 2022 gold, silver, and market economics update. The title of the discussion today is "The Bank of England Gold Price Rig Now Leads to Global Collapse." Let's get started. Okay, if you like this presentation, please give this video a thumbs up. Right here are the list of the social media sites where I post my analysis and thought. You can follow them there on a daily basis. Okay, let's start with a overview of the gold and silver market, the near history since 1970, and why should we care? Why is it an important thing to follow? Well, gold and silver historically acted as a warning system of when the central bank, the central planners there, created too much currency. So you create too much currency in too short a time and you drive goods price inflation. And we saw that in the 10 years from 1970 to 1980. Inflation rose at a 10% rate at the end of that period. And gold increased in price by 21 times during that 10-year period, and silver increased 24 times in that period. And the rising inflation rate and the run into the shelter of precious metals forced the Fed to increase interest rates to 20%, the Fed funds rate, which is the overnight rate. They were forced to raise it to that level to draw investors out of gold and silver and back into bonds, and also to slow borrowing so that inflation would slow down. So in that sense, gold and silver were one of the key braking systems on the central bankers' loose monetary policy during that period. So what happened with money and metals after the 1970s? So we can see here from 1970 to 1980, the M2 measure of called money stock, but it's really a currency stock. It increased by 2.7 times in that 10-year period. And that was enough to drive gold up by 21 times in price, and silver went up in 24 times in price, as measured as mentioned previously. Now, from 1980 to today, the money stock has increased 13.5 times. You can see here from 1980 to today, it's increased 13.5 times over that period. And yet, gold has only increased in price by 2 times, and silver is still half of the 1980s price. So what turned off the gold and silver inflation warning signal during this period? Because this was historically the tell of central banker loose money. So let's have a look at some basics of gold and silver price discovery. Globally, the vast majority of commercial and financial prices for gold, and that's physical gold and silver, have been set in London for more than a century. In 2016, Bullion Star noted that this was 88% of the global daily turnover, or the trading rate, the total trading that occurred on a daily basis. The trading in London, according to the LBMA, which is their association of traders, is primarily OTC, or over the counter, which is party to party, and every contract can vary. There's no set contract terms. And the key to the London gold and silver trade is that 95% of the trade is of the spot trading has been with unallocated contracts. So they're using the trading promissory notes. That's what an unallocated contract is, because there's no fixed amount of metal behind each of the contracts. And so the issue there is that when you have a trade, you've got trading for spot, which is immediate ownership. The trading is for promissory notes and not any specific bar of metal itself. So they're trading immediate ownership of promises for metal, not trading metal bars themselves, which had historically been the case. Okay, some gold market history. On the right there, you can see Evelyn Rothschild, and he was the final chairman of N.M. Rothschild, who were the bullion bankers. So from 1919 to 2004, the daily gold fix permanent chairman was N.M. Rothschild, and that was done at their London offices with five traders on the phone. And the Rothschild bullion bankers were the gold brokers also for the Bank of England during their time in the gold market. The London gold market operated with very little oversight until 1986. And there's the conflicting stories of whether the Bank of England or the Rothschilds pressed for the BOE to take over bullion market supervision and oversight. The Rothschilds claimed they were approached by the BOE. Other London metal market players note that Evelyn Rothschild, there on the right, spent a lot of time lobbying Margaret Thatcher for the BOE to take over the gold market oversight. So what happened in 1986? In 1986, the UK, the Thatcher government, had the Big Bang financial legislation, which led to the BOE, the Bank of England, being given formal oversight and supervision of the London bullion markets. So we see here, this is the taken from The Alchemist, which is the LBMA monthly magazine, and it's from issue number 68. And it says here, the bank assumed formal supervision of the foreign exchange and the bullion markets. And that this is a statement by Robert Gee. He wrote this article on the 25th anniversary of the LBMA. He was the former chairman of NM Rothschild, the bullion bank itself. And he says here that when approached by the BOE, he says, I then formed a steering committee drawn from associates as well as members to assist the bank, the bank being the BOE, in its drafting of a code of conduct for the London market. So what happened in 1986 was that the Bank of England, who are the money printers, or currency printers in the UK, were given supervision oversight of the London gold and silver markets that had historically and through today are the prime drivers in determining the gold, the global price for gold and silver. And yet gold and silver are the bankers, central bankers' nemesis, because they have historically been the tell when there's been excess money printing. So this is something that is extraordinarily concerning that it would happen. And the LBMA was incorporated on December 14th, 1987, formally. And then on January 9th, 3 weeks later, plus or minus, the Rothschilds Economist magazine, the cover had this picture of a phoenix rising from a fire of fiat currencies, including, you see here, there's a talon through the US dollar bill there, and it says, get ready for a world currency, and their date on the currency was 2018, so that would be 30 years later. And it looks like this could be a gold currency here, but they're implying that there's a new world currency coming forward, and also they're predicting here from this a conflagration of fiat currencies. They're essentially burning up. The other thing too that's quite curious is this Rosicrucian fleur-de-lis on the head of the phoenix. So the fleur-de-lis used in that manner is historically been made to signify royal ownership. So not sure what exactly it means in this picture here, but it's curious that there's a bird with a fleur-de-lis on its head. And there's also no mention in this article about famine and death that occurs with a currency failure. There's just this triumphal bird rising out of this fiat currency fire. So let's have a look at regulating London. So in 1987, the BOE jumped into regulatory action by formally creating the LBMA. As I mentioned, it was incorporated in December 1987, and it's an association of the traders in London's gold and silver market. And the driving code there was, they created the London Code of Conduct for Non-Investment Products, or NIPS, for physical trading of spot forwards and swaps of gold and silver, which is the actual physical trade, 95% of London's gold and silver trade. The remaining 5% is derivatives, and that was under the oversight of the FSA, not under the oversight of the BOE through this code of conduct. So important to note here is that the BOE rigorously regulates the London metals market with its NIPS code, which is purely voluntary. It's written by the traders, and the oversight is purely voluntary here. And the other thing is that the NIPS code itself, in writing, endorses the trading implicitly endorses it by putting it into the code, the trading of unallocated contracts, which basically by trading promissory notes or unallocated contracts, they convert gold and silver into virtual trading assets as opposed to real and limited assets. And these promissory notes, unallocated contracts, can be traded without limit. And it appears that they figuratively were so. So regulating London's physical bullion market, you can see here, this is the 2011 NIPS code. By the way, the Bank of England, I can't find it on their website. Bullion Star posted this 2011 copy of it, but it's not, you can't find it in any of the usual places that you'd expect to see. But they list the NIPS or the non-investment products, and it says here that it applies to trading in the wholesale market specifically, and it includes the bullion wholesale deposit markets, the spot or immediate ownership of the bars, which as I mentioned is the majority of the trading, forwards, and in the bullion markets themselves, for both the foreign currency and the bullion markets. Okay, regulating. Really, are they really regulating it? It says here, you know, this is from the Alchemist issue number 59. From July 2010 here, and it says that the London Code of Conduct for Non-Investment Products, the NIPS code, is an example of such a voluntary framework. So this is the oversight benchmark that they're using there in London. And this, as I mentioned, this is from the Alchemist magazine. The daily trading of unallocated gold and silver, how much are they trading? And this came from the LBMA's local London liquidity survey that they did in Q1 2011. And they did a survey and only 64% of the traders responded. So it's not complete by any means. But, you know, it's roughly two thirds. And using that number of traders, they found that it was roughly 9.2 times the data that they had been posting. With roughly two-thirds reporting, and they don't say whether this was the major houses or not. If it wasn't the major houses, or if one of the major houses weren't reporting, this 9.2 multiplier could be much, much higher. But using a 10-to-1 ratio, we see that the trading of gold was roughly 250 million ounces a day, and that the trading of silver was 3 billion ounces a day in 2013. And as mentioned, that the vast majority of this is the spot trading, which is, again, for immediate ownership. So in round numbers, they're trading between 2.5 and 3 times the daily mining production of gold and silver each day. And that's the versus the, you know, the annual mining production of gold and silver. And so it really raises a question here of what exactly are they trading? And if we look at many commodity markets, their open interest or the standing claims in the markets are 2 to 3 times daily trading. So that would equate to roughly a number of claims in London being 750 million ounces if we use a 3 multiplier of gold, and 9 billion ounces of silver if we use a 3x multiplier. And there's clearly nowhere near that amount of metal that's available in London for these traders. Now, what was the impact? We can see this is an interesting graph. It was created by Sharelynx, and Reg Howe. It came from an article that Reg Howe put on his website, and Reg played an important role in highlighting all this information. I actually requested that he produce this graph back in 2007 because he had done with one using just the standard consumer price index, and they're continually changing the CPI the way it's calculated. So you have really moving goalposts, and no way that you can really understand things in terms of a constant measure. But basically, what it does is this is an inverted gold price. So it's zero here at the top, and it's 6,000 at the bottom. The gold line here is the gold price. And the blue line here is a measure of yield, and it's the real interest rates. It's the 30-year Treasury bond yield minus the CPI rate. So if you have a spiking inflation rate that goes higher than the 30-year yield, you end up with a negative rate, and that's the blue line here. And you can see that the yield went down to roughly negative 3.5 in the early 80s or around 1980 there, and that the gold price in 2007 dollars went to roughly $5,000 an ounce. And you know, using a rough comparison, if we look at the price of a Big Mac of 1980 to today, you know, they're roughly five times more expensive today, and you get a fraction of the amount of meat. And you know, if you look at vehicles, pickup truck costs are six to seven times. So you know, that $850 peak being around $5,000 is not that far out. But anyways, we can see here that as the yields went negative, that the price of gold, remember, it's an inverted price of gold. So as the yields went further and further negative, that the price of gold soared higher and higher. And this was really what was stopping ultimately the central bankers from running this loose monetary policy. And then you can see as they raised interest rates, that the real yield went up all the way up to almost 9% in 1984, and that they started to quell the price of gold. It dropped from $5,000 in 2007 measure down to about $1,500 plus or minus. But then it started to go back up again as the yields, real yields, started to head towards a negative again. But then a strange thing happened here right around the time, 1987, when the LBMA was formed by the BOE, and they started to trade these promissory notes or unallocated contracts, that gold started disconnecting from the inverted relationship which it had had, and it started to drop. Remember, the higher we go, the lower the price of gold is going. And even as the real yields became increasingly negative and actually became materially more negative than they were in the late 70s when they drove the price of gold so high, we can see that gold just dropped down in 2000 in the nominal dollars at the time. It was about $250 an ounce at the bottom, and then it started to rise slowly again. One other thing to mention here is that in 1987, that was the year also that Alan Greenspan became chairman of the Federal Reserve. So interesting correlation there, that the formation in 1987 of the LBMA and the trading of these unallocated promissory notes for gold and silver, and then the we could really expect that disconnect, because you can create the metal without limit with the paper spot contracts. Should also be noted here that in the mid 90s, you know, Richard Pomboy was the first that I saw to mention it, and then James Turk and Frank Veneroso noted that there was a concerted, coordinated plan by the central banks to lease roughly 1,500 tons of gold, or, you know, round numbers, about 45 million ounces of gold per year into the market, and that this was coordinated through the Bank of International Settlement in Switzerland, which basically operates as an independent body with no oversight. So, you know, from the mid-90s period and on, it appears that this heavy dumping of gold into the market with these off-balance sheet leases by the central banks, and it was tied to Barrick Gold, and first of all, starting to hedge their metal into the market, and that's what allowed these banks to lease this metal into the market, so it could be sold, and then they would get future delivery back from the mining companies, and certainly that played a role as well. But we can see that the precipitous initiation of the breakaway and the large part of the decline here started with the formation of the LBMA there in London. So what is the end result? Well, the end result is that since 1980, debt in almost all the countries have become massive. They see massive monetary and debt expansion with a series of financial and asset bubbles, and unsustainable and really destructive consumption with the undervaluing of commodities. And this cycle here has been driven by the central bank monetary authorities. They've really gone wild with loose money and QE, etc. And they've been able to do that as there was basically a lid put on the silver and gold prices. So monetary inflation, the creation of money by the central banks went feral, but instead of it showing up in the price of gold and silver, it was buried in stocks, bonds, and real estate. So we really had a financial a financial paper series of decades there where the financial markets went ballistic. And there was no tell there from gold and silver, certainly. And so the central banks went to a policy of, you know, it's only inflation if it increases the CPI. Well, we know the CPI was changed over time, Boston Commission, and they implemented a whole series of what they called corrections into it over time so that we wouldn't see it in the CPI numbers. And they went from you only have inflation if it increases CPI to inflation is an inflation is an increase in the money stock, which is the critical way to look at it. If you increase the money stock with time, the prices of everything goes up. So we've had these stocks and bonds and paper assets driven to the moon. But now, as monetary inflation has been buried in assets, it's now going to show itself in real assets in a short time. And so what we would expect to see here is deflating financial assets with wildly inflating real asset prices like commodities, oil, gold, silver, energy, etc. So why would I say that? Well, we can see here, this is what I call the Fed's inflationary economic kill shot. And the red line here shows the total debt in the U.S. economy. So it rose to $91 trillion in June of 2022. And you can see here, this is the annual rate of increase of the M2 money stock or currency stock. And you can see here it spiked to 27% in 1 year. But basically, as we had this increase from 1980 of 13 times of M2, that there was very little signal of this increase because the CPI had been dumbed down and the gold and silver prices were locked down by trading these promissory notes. But then this spike in the annual rate of increase in M2 has now driven this jolt of inflation into the global economy. And so we're seeing now that this rampant price inflation that we're seeing is driving interest rates higher. And the problem with that, as I've noted previously, is that there's $91 trillion of total debt out there in the U.S. And Canada is actually in far worse shape than the U.S. in terms of total debt. But that just 1% increase in interest rates adds in the U.S. $900 billion per annum in increased interest burden. And so, you know, we're expecting to see the Fed here increase by another 0.75%. So they're going to be well over 3%. And so we're at about $3 trillion now in added interest burden on the U.S. economy from this spike in the money supply and this the startup of goods price inflation. One other thing to note here is that, you know, that investors have not been sitting on their hands as this insanity has been going on. And the Wall Street silver movement for sure has been one of the key players here in alerting investors of the value of silver. And what we're seeing now is a rapid drawdown of silver in both New York and London vaults. These are the New York vaults. They peaked at about 150 million ounces there in February, March 2021. And they're down now to 36 million ounces as of last week. And, you know, they're heading to be fully depleted at this linear rate of change by February. But by the way, this is registered vault holdings of silver, which is what's available to the market. There are more vault holdings of other types of silver, but not of the registered category, which is what's required for delivery of these trading contracts. So historically, silver was the key monetary metal for daily citizen transactions. And I suspect this is why we've seen so much attention paid to silver in terms of its negative attention in terms of its value today being only half of the 1980 high, while the amount of currency in the system has gone up by over 13.5 times in the U.S. And also a key note here is that the silver is an alternative to the CBDC, the central bank digital currency, or what is called stocking currency. It basically stocks consumers and citizens and tracks all their expenditures that they make. And can also be controlled in terms of availability with social credit scoring, which is what China has now done to its citizens as well. So very anti-social move by the central banks is being advanced here. Canada, the U.S., all, you know, the the European Central Bank, all of them are working on this central bank digital currency or stocking currency as a control mechanism for citizens in the future. So something to keep an eye on, and certainly we can see with this large drawdown, we're heading for zero, and I would expect a crisis in the market before the new year at the rate that we're drawing it down. It's not going to go to zero, just as palladium didn't go to zero before there was a crisis in London and New York. In 2016, the price went up by 5 times. We're in a very short period. I think we're going to see a run starting on silver here as this registered and the London vault holdings go down as well. Okay, that is it for today, October 30, 2022. Thank you for your time. Please give the video a thumbs up if you enjoy it. And once again, these are the social media sites at which I post. Bye for now.